Hi, welcome to the Honeycomb Podcast, the podcast all about New Zealand food and drink and the people that make it happen. I'm Asher Boot, your host and owner of The Ramen Shop, Hillside Kitchen and Cellar, and Tenekori Bistro. Taking care of all the technical stuff is producer Steve Cochran of Rockpool Productions.
This week I'm joined by Simon Bell, who's our resident wine expert. Can I call you that?
I'll allow you to call me that just this once.
Just this once, all right. Well, Simon's here with us, and he's going to have a chat to me about wine. On this first episode, we're really going to learn the basics. But before we jump in, Simon, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? What's your background with wine?
Sure. I've now been in the industry for 17 years, kind of cut my teeth in vineyards in central Otago after leaving school. I've kind of been involved in every part of the wine industry now, from starting in vineyards and then through some study, working in wineries, and now involved in the sales and distribution side of things. So I come from a background where I've had access to lots of different touch points in the industry, and it's given me a pretty good overall understanding of how things work. So I think it gives me a good base to help share some knowledge and kind of break it down and create a platform where we can discuss things in layman's terms, make it approachable and friendly, give people an opportunity to ask the questions that they've always wanted to ask.
All right. You've spoken to a lot of people, just general population, maybe not really into wine. What are some of the problems you think that are out there? Is it pretentiousness?
Yeah, 100%. I think for a lot of people, there is this belief that the wine industry is fancy and pretentious, but it's only one part of it that we see. I think a great way to think about the industry is to consider it and remember that it is primary industry. We are farming, we're growing things from the land. If we think about it as growing grapes and farming flavor, that's a great way to start. If you went to a winery to buy some wine 20 or 30 years ago, you'd probably be greeted by somebody at the winery door in work boots, covered in wine. Someone who's slaving away in the cellar creating this wine. If you go out into the vineyard, you've got somebody who's wearing work boots and high vis, and they spend 12 months of the year slaving away outside in the vineyard.
Yeah.
It's only at the restaurant or the fancy wine tasting end where it becomes pretentious. And I think that does create a barrier. If we remember that it's similar to dairy or sheep farming, we are farmers. We just have a different product at the end.
Right. So I've drunk wine for a long time, but I've never really delved into it. I haven't really read that many books. I've listened to a few podcasts. Mm. Maybe it's laziness. I'm not sure. I pretty much know what I like, but I just thought I needed a bit of guidance to start me on a journey, of doing all this. So why should we do this?
I think you raise a really good point. I think there's a lot of people like you that drink wine, enjoy wine. I guess maybe it comes down to encouragement to know that you're appreciating it, or to have a feeling that you're appreciating it the way you think you should be, or it's some sort of reassurance that you're doing it the right way. Mm. And I think that's one of the key things with all wine tasting. It comes down to confidence. We all have the ability to pick up a wine and smell it and taste it and identify what we smell and we taste, because it's an individual's perception of what's in the glass. But I think it's helpful to have some steps perhaps, and I guess that's what we're trying to do here, is break it down and give you the confidence to know that you're on the right path. Give you the confidence that when you go to a restaurant and you're dealing with a sommelier or someone in front of house, that you can be confident to ask for guidance on your wine selection. Mm. And be more confident that when you choose a wine, you're going to enjoy it, or know enough about your own tastes that you can let somebody else guide you and help you.
Right. And we really shouldn't be scared of asking for help in
Not
a
at
restaurant.
All. Not at all. To add to understanding wine appreciation, and to add to why would we want to learn a bit more about this, it helps to remember that wine takes a long time to make and we get one chance each year. 12 months of farming flavor, and then we get to make it once in each growing region, once a year. So we get one chance. So when you taste wine, you're tasting a snapshot of that season. I had an epiphany recently, or maybe a couple of years ago, where I realized that wine is one of the most honest things you can taste. The more experience you gain and the more knowledge you gain, you are then able to taste a wine without seeing the bottle, you know, taste it blind, and you can tell, you know, what grape variety it is, where it was grown, what country and what region. Yep. You can taste what kind of season it was. You can taste what the winemaker's done to it, the soil type that it was grown on. Everything's there to taste. It's an absolutely incredible beverage. And I can't think of any others that are quite that honest. So it's, you know, there's been there's a lot of effort that goes into every bottle of wine. And if we can learn more how to understand what we're tasting, I think we do the wine justice. And I'm not saying you need to savor every sip and every smell, but sure, when you first open a bottle of wine, if you just take a second to indulge your senses and, you know, think for a second about what's gone into this, this bottle of wine, all the hard work that's gone into it.
Sure.
Maybe we prove our understanding and our empathy for the people that have produced it.
No, that's good advice. So why don't we get started on how we taste?
Sure. Should we pour some wine?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I'll never say no.
Good old screw cap.
So what are we tasting here?
We have a Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc made by Starborough. So I think the best place to start is, I mean, something as simple as picking up the glass. Now, we generally hold the wine by the stem. There's a couple of reasons for that. The first is, particularly with white wines, we don't want to warm the wine up. We serve it chilled intentionally. So we want to, you know, preserve that as much as we can. So holding it by the glass stops our body heat from warming the wine up if we were holding it by the bowl. We also don't put grubby little fingerprints all over the glass, because we'll come to appearance in a minute. Appearance is important.
Right.
Not saying you're grubby. I'm just saying we all have natural oils in our fingers.
Yeah, yeah.
The third reason to hold the glass by the stem is it makes you look like you know what you're doing. You know, fake it till you make it.
If you give it a swirl, even better.
Absolutely. You know, grab it nice down by the base of the stem. Give it a swirl around.
Yeah.
Look at that. Professional. So we're going to focus on sight, smell, and taste.
Okay.
The first thing we should do is look at it. If you imagine when a plate of food comes out in a restaurant, the first thing you do is you look at it.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. I'll assume that you've been eating food your whole life.
Oh, yes.
Well, you eat it with your eyes first.
Sure.
So you'll have an idea of whether or not you're going to like it just from looking at it.
Right.
The more you learn about wine, the more understanding you have about what you like. For example, if you have a white wine that's got very, very little color, it's probably not going to be a big, round, rich, textural style of wine.
Okay.
And then, say, with a red wine, if you get something that's very light in color, we can assume that's going to be a lighter, brighter style of red wine, as right. opposed to something with lots of really dark color, it's going to be a much heavier style of wine.
Right.
So okay. just from looking at it, you can make those assumptions.
So the same applies to white wine then? The more color, the more flavor, maybe?
I mean, a good example would be if you had something that was really golden in color, you would perhaps think that it was something with a lot of oak influence, like a rich Chardonnay, mm-hmm. or perhaps something that was quite sweet, like dessert wine.
Right.
So there's a few things that can contribute to the color, but they would probably be a couple of giveaways.
Okay.
So once we've had a good look at it, give it a nice big swirl around in the glass. Mm-hmm. Now what we're doing is we're trying to increase the surface area, create more space for air to get into the wine. As the air gets in there, it's going to combine with all the volatile aromas. They're going to be released into the atmosphere. And we're using a wine glass because it's got a nice big bowl to swirl in, then a slightly narrower top. So that will trap and concentrate those aromas in the glass. So we give it a nice big swirl and then take a nice big sniff. Really, really aromatic. You'll find too that if you put your nose right in the glass versus hovering it just above, you get some slightly different aromas.
Right.
One of the things I learned really early on in the wine industry is, you know, it's we're talking about evaluating wine here and, you know, learning how to appreciate it better. The number one thing is whether you like it or not.
Right.
So we want people to enjoy their wine experience.
Sure.
Now, it's not just about appreciation. It's about enjoying. Now, if you really enjoy a wine and you've managed to pick up a little bit from this, how you can appreciate it more, then I think we're winning. But the first things first, you know, if you smell this wine, Does it appeal to you?
Oh, absolutely. I love Sauvignon Blancs.
Right.
So okay. I know that, you know, and I know the smell. I can tell from this, this is something that I could drink every day, probably.
Perfect. So once we've given it a good sniff,
yeah,
I'm going to take some into our mouth. You might have seen wine tasters do what's called trilling, and that's when you have the wine in your mouth and you gently draw some air through it. Now, the purpose of that, it's a little bit like when we're swirling it in the glass. When we swirl it in the glass, we release the volatile aromas. When we draw air through it in our mouth, we release those aromas in our mouth, and the aromas travel up the back of our nasal cavity to a nerve ending called the olfactory bulb, which then sends those aroma messages to our brain, and we interpret them as flavors.
Right.
So 80% of taste is actually smell. Right. You're eating or drinking anything. So smell's really important. So if you're feeling brave, you can try taking a small amount of wine into your mouth. Actually, let it sit there for a little while first. Just kind of hold it in your mouth and let the acidity of the wine become a little bit more apparent to you.
Okay.
And then draw some air through it gently, kind of like this. Perfect.
Mm.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's a bit warm out today, so.
Lovely and refreshing. Not really racy and acidic like a lot of Sauvignon Blanc can sometimes be. I find this has got some really nice tropical fruit character. Still a touch of the kind of the capsicum herbaceousness, but you know, very much, you know, beautiful tropical fruit texture in the front of the palate.
Mm.
A nice long persistent flavor as well. You can taste it quite a long time after you've finished, after you swallowed it.
Yeah, definitely. And so, I don't find that one overly acidic. So when we taste acid, what part of our tongue?
So
talking about
the very sides of our tongues, we really feel acidity. The front, the tip, is where we generally pick up sugar and sweetness.
Mm-hmm.
The sides is where we pick up acidity, flavor kind of through the middle, and then at the back, bitterness and astringency. But if we really think about it, you know, a great way to compare the difference is if you've got, say, a classic Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc or any high acid grape variety like Riesling Sauvignon Blanc. And then compare that to a grape variety with much lower acid, like Viognier or even Pinot Gris to an extent. You know, if you taste those two wines side by side, hold them in your mouth, you'll feel the Sauvignon Blanc is a lot more kind of, we often describe it as being racy. Or some people will say sharp.
Right.
We try to use positive descriptors with wine. So we might say, instead of saying this wine feels very sharp, we might just say it's wonderfully crisp and fresh. Yeah.
And do you think that you need to taste something two or three times to sort of get your palate used to it? Because I find sometimes with beer, especially, you know, if it's a really hoppy beer, sometimes, you know, your tongue's a bit, whoa, what was that? But on the second and third drink, it's like, okay, right.
Yeah,
Do you think it's the same with wine?
I think for the most part, yeah, especially if it's the first wine of the day, because you should have wine every day. If it's the first taste of the day, yes, I think there are exceptions to the rule as well, though. Sometimes you'll taste a wine that just really sings to you, you know, and from the first smell to the first sip to the last, it blows your mind. But yeah, I definitely agree that two or three sips, as your palate gets used to it, you know, kind of balance out the pH of your mouth with the acidity in the wine, and particularly sort of drier red wine is going to coat your mouth with tannin and prepare it.
So don't be judgy by one sip.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like when you first open a bottle of wine, think about when a wine gets bottled, imagine it's being put into hibernation. There's a lot of humans out there that aren't morning people.
Yeah.
Wine is not a morning person.
Right.
When you open the bottle of wine, it's kind of like setting off the alarm clock, and wine just wants to snooze for a while.
Mm.
If you give it some time to get some air and wake up, you know, you can put it in a decanter or pour it into a glass and wait a little while. Generally, wine will change and open up and develop. So you'll find it may get a lot better with half an hour of breathing time.
Right. Okay. So let's talk about some basic food matches, but let's talk about something a bit different, like takeaways.
Sure.
If I wanted something with my fish and chips.
Classic Kiwi.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
The wine we're drinking right now is kind of the perfect match for fish and chips. Fish and chips is a tough one. Really, really fatty, oily. So if we think about wine and food matching, if we take it to real basics, Often what we're trying to do is contrast. So if we think of fatty food like fish and chips, we often look for a wine with plenty of acidity and freshness to kind of cut through that fat and right. cut through the oiliness. So Sauvignon Blanc, Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc is the perfect match, absolute perfect match. And then if we kind of think of the other side of the coin, like if we go from a fatty, oily dish, we can also match like with like. So if, say, Japanese takeaway is something nice and bright and fresh.
Yep.
If we think about those flavors, again, you've got often raw fish, oily fish. So something with acidity to cut through that, but perhaps something a little bit lighter and more delicate, something aromatic like Pinot Gris, maybe something floral like Gewürztraminer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, anything in that kind of lighter, more delicate spectrum to go with that lighter, more delicate food.
Right. Then what about just ordinary burgers, hamburgers?
Yeah. The classic match of red meat, anything protein rich. We want something with some tannin.
Okay.
So if we think about tannin, it's a term that gets thrown around a lot in wine, and people will smile and nod and not really know what it means all the time.
Right.
If we just take a step back and think about a really strong cup of tea, and if you leave the tea bag in for way too long, you get that very kind of drying sensation in your mouth, that
yep.
kind of
yep.
feeling. That's tannin. So it's drying out your mouth. If we have a protein source, like a red meat or a hard cheese, the tannins kind of attack the proteins in that food and don't dry out the feeling in our mouth quite so much.
Right.
So if we're having a protein-rich meal like a burger, yeah, we're going to go for a red wine. And if we're talking summertime, I think a good option is something that's a little bit more fruit-driven, you know, rather than something really big and really heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a nice Hawke's Bay Merlot, maybe something a little bit lighter like a Pinot Noir. Perhaps Saint Flotago.
Right.
Maybe something Spanish.
So how about our summer barbecues? Would the same probably apply to that? Because you're talking about sausage, probably burgers.
Yeah, definitely. We've probably all said we've tasted red wine and gone, yeah, this would be a great summer barbecue wine. If we think about those wines, they're generally, we think of something budget friendly, so not too complex, something nice and straightforward, easy to drink, some really nice fruit character in the front of the palate, and a nice dry finish. If it's nice and dry, it's going to go really well with those protein-rich foods off the barbecue.
Right.
And especially something that's got some kind of smoky or savory qualities to it. Maybe something like Syrah or, something out of Spain, Rioja or Grenache.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a nice match with those smoky, charry barbecue foods.
Right. It's making me hungry and thirsty. So let's talk now about something people can do at home. What would you recommend, like if you're just starting out? I mean, you taught me, sort of the swirling and the smelling and the tasting. So what are the things can we tell them on this first episode?
I talked about a lot of this is about confidence. From experience, I get a lot of people say to me, it all smells and tastes the same. White wines all smell and taste the same to me. A really good exercise is to get two different wines, like two different grape varieties. And if we go back to talking about acidity, a Sauvignon Blanc versus a Pinot Gris.
Okay.
If you go to your, wherever you buy your wine from and get a bottle of Sauvignon Blanc and a bottle of Pinot Gris, doesn't matter which ones, if you get somebody to help you and they pour you a glass of each and you don't know which is which, they do, hopefully. Mm. If you then smell and taste them the way we've talked about and just ask yourself the question, do these taste different?
Right.
The answer is yes, they will taste different. If you can see that, you're pretty much there. It's then we start to learn, well, what about them is different? And it is a learned skill. It's not something that anyone's born with the ability to do.
Mm.
As humans, we need to be able to smell and taste things to know whether or not we should eat them,
right.
Whether or not they'll make us sick.
Yeah.
All of the other stuff we're doing is just for personal pleasure.
Mm.
So if you can get somebody to pour you two glasses of wine, different varieties, and smell and taste them on their own, and identify that they're different, then this is probably the place for you to be
right.
listening to see where we go next.
Yeah. Simon, thanks for being here on the podcast.
My pleasure.
I feel much more confident already in my Sauvignon Blanc tasting.
Excellent.
If you out there listening to this have any questions for Simon, you can contact us on info@honeycomb.co.nz, or you can also find us on Instagram and Facebook. So Simon, thank you very much for being with us, having this discussion about the basics of wine.
No problem at all. looking forward to the next one and looking forward to seeing how far we can go.
Thanks for taking the time to listen to us today. Check out honeycomb.co.nz for information and links relating to this episode. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast so you'll never miss an episode.